Reese let out a low laugh and rolled out of bed. Then let's get out of here.
For a heartbeat, I wondered if I'd dreamed up everything that had happened the night before. From the slight, pleasant soreness between my legs, I knew I hadn't, but maybe it'd be easier to pretend that nothing had happened. The alternative might be more than I could endure. We flew for most of the day, far and wide, close to where the forested steps rose up to meet the Illyrian mountains. We didn't speak of the night before. We barely spoke at all. Another clearing, another day of playing with my power, summoning wings, winnowing, fire and ice and water, and now wind. The wind and breezes that rippled across the sweeping valleys and wheat fields of the day court, then whipped up the snow capping their highest peaks. I could feel the words rising in him as the hours passed. I'd catch him watching me whenever I paused for a break. Catch him opening up his mouth, and then shutting it. It rained at one point, and then turned colder and colder with the cloud cover. We had yet to stay in the woods past dark, and I wondered what sort of creatures might prowl through them. The sun was indeed sinking by the time Reese gathered me in his arms and took to the skies. There was only the wind and his warmth and the boom of his powerful wings. I ventured, "What is it?" His attention remained on the dark pines sweeping past.
"There is one more story I need to tell you."
I waited. He didn't continue. I put my hand against his cheek, the first intimate touch we'd had all day. His skin was chilled, his eyes bleak as they slid to mine. "I don't walk away. Not from you," I swore quietly. His gaze softened.
"Feyre."
Reese roared in pain, arching against me. I felt the impact, felt blinding pain through the bond that ripped through my own mental shields, felt the shudder of the dozen places the arrows struck him as they shot from bows hidden beneath the forest canopy. And then we were falling. Reese gripped me, and his magic twisted around us in a dark wind, readying to winnow us out, and failed. Failed because those were ash arrows through him, through his wings. They'd tracked us. Yesterday, the little magic he'd used with Lucian, they'd somehow tracked it and found us even so far away. More arrows. Reese flung out his power. Too late. Arrows shredded his wings, struck his legs. And I think I was screaming. Not for fear as we plummeted, but for him. For the blood and the greenish sheen on those arrows. Not just ash, but poison. A dark wind, his power, slammed into me. And then I was being thrown far and wide as he sent me tumbling beyond the arrow's range, tumbling through the air. Reese's roar of wrath shook the forest, the mountains beyond. Birds rose up in waves, taking to the skies, fleeing that bellow. I slammed into the dense canopy, my body barking in agony as I shattered through wood and pine and leaf, down and down. Focus, focus, focus. I flung out a wave of that hard air that had once shielded me from Tamlin's temper, threw it out beneath me like a net. I collided with an invisible wall so solid I thought my right arm might snap. But I stopped falling through the branches. 30 feet below, the ground was nearly impossible to see in the growing darkness. I did not trust that shield to hold my weight for long. I scrambled across it, trying not to look down, and leaped the last few feet onto a wide pine bough. Hurtling over the wood, I reached the trunk and clung to it, panting, reordering my mind around the pain, the steadiness of being on ground. I listened. For Reese, for his wings, for his next roar. Nothing. No sign of the archers who he'd been falling to meet.
who he'd thrown me far, far away from. Trembling, I dug my nails into the bark as I listened for him. Ash arrows. Poisoned ash arrows. The forest grew ever darker, the trees seeming to wither into skeletal husks. Even the birds hushed themselves. I stared at my palm, at the eye inked there, and sent a blind thought through it, down that bond. Where are you? Tell me and I'll come to you, I'll find you. There was no wall of onyx adamant at the end of the bond, only endless shadow. Things, great enormous things, were rustling in the forest.
Resand?
No response. The last of the light slipped away.
Resand, please!
No sound. And the bond between us? Silent. I'd always felt it protecting me, seducing me, laughing at me on the other side of my shields, and now it had vanished. A guttural howl ripped from the distance, like rocks scraping against each other. Every hair on my body rose. We never stayed out here past sunset. I took steadying breaths, knocking one of my few remaining arrows into my bow. On the ground, something sleek and dark slithered past, the leaves crunching under what looked to be enormous paws tipped in needle-like claws. Something began screaming. High, panicked screeches, as if it were being torn apart. Not Reese, something else. I began shaking again, the tip of my arrow gleaming as it shuddered with me.
Where are you? Where are you? Where are you? Let me find you! Let me find you! Let me find you!
I unstrung my bow. Any bit of light might give me away. Darkness was my ally. Darkness might shield me. It had been anger the first time I'd winnowed, and anger the second time I'd done it. Reese was hurt. They had hurt him, targeted him, and now... Now? It was not hot anger that poured through me, but something ancient and frozen and so vicious that it honed my focus into razor sharpness. And if I wanted to track him, if I wanted to get to the spot I'd last seen him, I'd become a figment of darkness, too. I was running down the branch just as something crashed through the brush nearby, snarling and hissing. But I folded myself into smoke and starlight and winnowed from the edge of my branch and into the tree across from me. The creature below loosed a cry, but I paid it no heed. I was night. I was wind. Tree to tree I winnowed, so fast the beasts roaming the forest floor barely registered my presence. And if I could grow claws and wings, I could change my eyes, too. I'd hunted at dusk often enough to see how animal eyes worked, how they glowed. Cool command had my own eyes widening, shifting. A temporary blindness as I winnowed between trees again, running down a wide branch and winnowing through the air for the next. I landed, and the night forest became bright. And the things prowling on the forest floor below, I didn't look at them. No, I kept my attention on winnowing through the trees until I was on the outskirts of the spot where we'd been attacked, all the while tugging on that bond, searching for that familiar wall on the other side of it. Then, an arrow was stuck in the branches high above me. I winnowed onto the broad bough. And when I yanked out that length of ash wood, when I felt my immortal body quail in its presence, a low snarl slipped out of me. I hadn't been able to count how many arrows Reese had taken, how many he'd shielded me from, using his own body. I shoved the arrow into my quiver and continued on, circling the area until I spotted another, down by the pine needle carpet. I thought frost might have gleamed in my wake as I winnowed in the direction the arrow would have been shot, finding another and another. I kept them all. Until I discovered the place where the pine branches were broken and shattered. Finally I smelled Reese, and the trees around me glimmered with ice as I spied his blood splattered on the branches, the ground, and ash arrows all around the site. As if an ambush had been waiting and unleashed a hail of hundreds too fast for him to detect or avoid, especially if he'd been distracted with me, distracted all day. I winnowed in bursts through the site, careful not to stay on the ground too long lest the creatures roaming nearby scent me. He'd fallen hard, the tracks told me, and they'd had to drag him away quickly. They'd tried to hide the blood trail, but even without his mind speaking to me, I could find that scent anywhere. I would find that scent anywhere. They might have been good at concealing their tracks, but I was better. I continued my hunt, an ash arrow now knocked into my bow as I read the signs. 2 dozen at least had taken him away, though more had been there for the initial assault. The others had winnowed out, leaving limited numbers to haul him toward the mountains, toward whoever might be waiting. They were moving swiftly, deeper and deeper into the woods, toward the slumbering giants of the Illyrian mountains. His blood had flowed all the way. Alive, it told me. He was alive. Though if the wounds weren't clotting, the ash arrows were doing their work. I brought down one of Tamlin's sentinels with a single well-placed ash arrow. I tried not to think about what a barrage of them could do. His roar of pain echoed in my ears. And through that merciless, unyielding rage, I decided that if Rhys was not alive, if he was harmed beyond repair, I didn't care who they were and why they had done it. They were all dead. Tracks veered from the main group, scouts probably sent to find a spot for the night. I slowed my winnowing, carefully tracing their steps now. 2 groups had split, as if trying to hide where they'd gone. Rhys's scent clung to both. They'd taken his clothes, then, because they'd known I'd track them, seen me with him. They'd known I'd come for him. A trap. It was likely a trap. I paused at the top branches of a tree overlooking where the 2 groups had cleaved, scanning the ground. 1 headed deeper into the mountains. 1 headed along them. Mountains were Illyrian territory. Mountains would run the risk of being discovered by a patrol. They'd assumed that's where I would doubt they would be stupid enough to go. They'd assume I'd think they'd keep to the unguarded, unpatrolled forest. I weighed my options, smelling the 2 paths. They hadn't counted on the small, second scent that clung there, entwined with his. And I didn't let myself think about it as I winnowed toward the mountain tracks, outracing the wind. I didn't let myself think about the fact that my scent was on Rhys, clinging to him after last night. He'd changed his clothes that morning, but the smell on his body. Without taking a bath, I was all over him. So I winnowed toward him, toward me. And when the narrow cave appeared at the foot of a mountain, the faintest glimmer of light escaping from its mouth, I halted. A whip cracked. And every word, every thought and feeling went out of me. Another whip. And another. I slung my bow over my shoulder and pulled out a 2nd ash arrow. It was quick work to bind the 2 arrows together so that a tip gleamed on either end, and to do the same for 2 more. And when I was done, when I looked at the 2 makeshift daggers in either hand, when that whip sounded again, I winnowed into the cave. They'd picked 1 with a narrow entrance that opened into a wide, curving tunnel, setting up their little camp around the bend to avoid detection. The scouts at the front, 2 high fey males with unmarked armor who I didn't recognize, didn't notice as I went past. 2 other scouts patrolled just inside the cave mouth, watching those at the front. I was there and vanished before they could spot me. I rounded the corner. Time slipping and bending, and my night-dark eyes burned at the light. I changed them, winnowing between 1 blink and the next, past the other 2 guards. And when I beheld the 4 others in that cave, that held the tiny fire they'd built and what they'd already done to him. I pushed against the bond between us, almost sobbing as I felt that adamant wall. But there was nothing behind it, only silence. They'd found strange chains of bluish stone to spread his arms, suspending him from either wall of the cave. His body sagged from them, his back a ravaged slab of meat, and his wings. They'd left the ash arrows through his wings, 7 of them. His back to me, only the sight of his blood running down his skin told me he was alive. And it was enough. It was enough that I detonated. I winnowed to the 2 guards holding twin whips. The others around them shouted as I dragged my ash arrows across their throats, deep and vicious, just like I'd done countless times while hunting. 1, 2. Then they were on the ground, whips limp. Before the guards could attack, I winnowed again to the ones nearest. Blood sprayed. Winnow, strike. Winnow, strike. Those wings. Those beautiful, powerful wings. The guards at the mouth of the cave had come rushing in. They were the last to die. And the blood on my hands felt different from what it had been like under the mountain. This blood, I savored. Blood for blood. Blood for every drop they'd spilled of his. Silence fell in the cave as their final shouts finished echoing, and I winnowed in front of Reese, shoving the bloody ash daggers into my belt. I gripped his face. Pale. Too pale. But his eyes opened to slits, and he groaned. I didn't say anything as I lunged for the chains holding him, trying not to notice the bloody handprints I'd left on him. The chains were like ice. Worse than ice. They felt wrong. I pushed past the pain and strangeness of them, and the weakness that barreled down my spine, and unlatched him. His knees slammed into the rock so hard I winced, but I rushed to the other arm, still upraised. Blood flowed down his back, his front, pooling in the dips between his muscles. "Reese," I breathed. I almost dropped to my own knees as I felt a flicker of him behind his mental shields, as if the pain and exhaustion had reduced it to window thinness. His wings, peppered with those arrows, remained spread, so painfully taut that I winced. "Reese, we need to winnow home." His eyes opened again, and he gasped. "Can't." Whatever poison was on those arrows, then his magic, his strength. But we couldn't stay here, not when the other group was nearby. So I said, "Hold on," and gripped his hand before I threw us into night and smoke. Winnowing was so heavy, as if all the weight of him, all that power, dragged me back. It was like wading through mud, but I focused on the forest, on a moss-shrouded cave I'd seen earlier that day while slaking my thirst, tucked into the side of the riverbank. I'd peeked into it, and nothing but leaves had been within. At least it was safe, if not a bit damp. Better than being in the open. And it was our only option. Every mile was an effort, but I kept my grip on his hand, terrified that if I let go, I'd leave him somewhere I might never be able to find, and then we were there, in that cave, and he grunted in agony as we slammed into the wet, cold stone floor. "Reese," I pleaded, stumbling in the dark. Such impenetrable dark, and with those creatures around us, I didn't risk a fire. But he was so cold, and still bleeding. I willed my eyes to shift again, and my throat tightened at the damage. The lashings across his back kept dribbling blood, but the wings. "I have to get these arrows out." He grunted again, hands braced on the floor. And the sight of him like that, unable to even make a sly comment or half smile. I went up to his wing. "This is going to hurt." I clenched my jaw as I studied the way they'd pierced the beautiful membrane.
I'd have to snap the arrows in two and slide each end out. No, not snapping. I'd have to cut it, slowly, carefully, smoothly, to keep any shards and rough bits from causing further damage. Who knew what an ash splinter might do if it got stuck in there?
Do it, he panted, his voice hoarse.
There were 7 arrows in total, 3 in this wing, 4 in the other. They'd removed the ones from his legs, for whatever reason, the wounds already half clotted. Blood dripped on the floor. I took the knife from where it was strapped to my thigh, studied the entry wound, and gently gripped the shaft. He hissed. I paused.
Do it, Rhys repeated,
his knuckles white as he fisted his hands on the ground. I set the small bit of serrated edge against the arrow and began sawing as gently as I could. The blood-soaked muscles of his back shifted and tensed, and his breathing turned sharp, uneven. Too slow. I was going too slowly. But any faster and it might hurt him more, might damage the sensitive wing. Did you know, I said over the sound of my sawing, that one summer, when I was 17, Elaine bought me some paint? We'd had just enough to spend on extra things, and she bought me and Nesta presents. She didn't have enough for a full set, but bought me red and blue and yellow. I used them to the last drop, stretching them as much as I could, and painted little decorations in our cottage. His breath heaved out of him, and I finally sawed through the shaft. I didn't let him know what I was doing before I yanked out the arrow in a smooth pull. He swore, body locking up, and blood gushed out, then stopped. I almost loosed a sigh of relief. I set to work on the next arrow. I painted the table, the cabinets, the doorway, and we had this old black dresser in our room, one drawer for each of us. We didn't have much clothing to put in there anyway. I got through the second arrow faster, and he braced himself as I tugged it out. Blood flowed, then clotted. I started on the third. I painted flowers for Elaine on her drawer, I said, sawing and sawing. Little roses and begonias and irises. And for Nesta. The arrow clattered to the ground and I ripped out the other end. I watched the blood flow and stop. Watched him slowly lower the wing to the ground, his body trembling. Nesta, I said, starting on the other wing. I painted flames for her. She was always angry, always burning. I think she and Amryn would be fast friends. I think she would like Valaris, despite herself. And I think Elaine would like it too. Though she'd probably cling to Azrael just to have some peace and quiet. I smiled at the thought, at how handsome they would be together. If the warrior ever stopped quietly loving more, I doubted it. Azrael would likely love more until he was a whisper of darkness between the stars. I finished the fourth arrow and started on the fifth. Rhys's voice was raw as he said to the floor,
"What did you paint for yourself?"
I drew out the fifth, moving to the sixth before saying, "I painted the night sky." He stilled. I went on. I painted stars and the moon and clouds and just endless, dark sky. I finished the sixth and was well on my way sawing through the seventh before I said, I never knew why. I rarely went outside at night. Usually I was so tired from hunting that I just wanted to sleep. But I wonder. I pulled out the seventh and final arrow. I wonder if some part of me knew what was waiting for me, that I would never be a gentle grower of things or someone who burned like fire, but that I would be quiet and enduring and as faceted as the night, that I would have beauty for those who knew where to look, and if people didn't bother to look, but to only fear it, then I didn't particularly care for them anyway. I wonder if, even in my despair and hopelessness, I was never truly alone. I wonder if I was looking for this place, looking for you all.
The blood stopped flowing, and his other wing lowered to the ground. Slowly, the lashes on his back began to clot. I walked around to where he was bowed over the floor, hands braced on the rock, and knelt. His head lifted. Pain-filled eyes, bloodless lips.
"You saved me," he rasped.
"You can explain who they were later."
"Ambush,"
Reese said anyway, his eyes scanning my face for signs of hurt.
"Highburn soldiers with ancient chains from the king himself to nullify my power. They must have traced the magic I used yesterday. I'm sorry."
The words tumbled out of him. I brushed back his dark hair. That was why I hadn't been able to use the bond, to speak mind to mind. "Rest," I said, and moved to retrieve the blanket from my pack. It'd have to do. He gripped my wrist before I could rise, his eyelids lowered. Consciousness ripped from him, too fast. Much too fast and too heavy.
"I was looking for you too," Reese murmured,
and passed out. Chapter 50. I slept beside him, offering what warmth I could, monitoring the cave entrance the entirety of the night. The beasts in the forest prowled past in an endless parade, and only in the gray light before dawn did their snarls and hissing fade. Reese was unconscious as watery sunlight painted the stone walls, his skin clammy. I checked his wounds and found them barely healed, an oily sheen oozing from them. And when I put a hand on his brow, I swore at the heat. Poison had coated those arrows, and that poison remained in his body. The Illyrian camp was so distant that my own powers, feeble from the night before, wouldn't get us far. But if they had those horrible chains to nullify his powers, had ash arrows to bring him down, then that poison... An hour passed. He didn't get better. No, his golden skin was pale, paling. His breaths were shallow. "Reese," I said softly. He didn't move. I tried shaking him. If he could tell me what the poison was, maybe I could try to find something to help him. He did not awaken. Around midday, panic gripped me in a tight fist. I didn't know anything about poisons or remedies. And out here, so far from anyone, would Cassian track us down in time? Would Moore winnow in? I tried to rouse Reese over and over. The poison had dragged him down deep. I would not risk waiting for help to arrive. I would not risk him. So I bundled him in as many layers as I could spare, yet took my cloak, kissed his brow, and left. We were only a few hundred yards from where I'd been hunting the night before, and as I emerged from the cave, I tried not to look at the tracks of the beasts who had passed through right above us. Enormous, horrible tracks. What I was to hunt would be worse. We were already near running water, so I made my trap close by, building my snare with hands that I refused to let shake. I placed the cloak, mostly new, rich, lovely, in the center of my snare, and I waited. An hour, two. I was about to start bargaining with the cauldron, with the mother, when a creeping familiar silence fell over the wood. Rippling toward me, the birds stopped chirping. The wind stopped sighing in the pines. And when a crack sounded through the forest, followed by a screech that hollowed out my ears, I knocked an arrow into my bow and set off to see the Suriel. It was as horrific as I remembered.
tattered robes barely concealing a body made of not skin, but what looked to be solid, worn bone. Its lipless mouth held two large teeth, and its fingers, long, spindly, clicked against each other while it weighed the fine cloak I'd laid in the center of my snare, as if the cloth had been blown in on a wind.
"Feyre, curse-breaker," it said, turning toward me, in a voice that was both one and many.
I lowered my bow. "I have need of you."
Time. I was running out of time. I could feel it, that urgency begging me to hurry through the bond.
"What fascinating changes a year has wrought on you, on the world," it said.
A year? Yes, it had been over a year now since I'd first crossed the wall.
"I have questions," I said. It smiled, each of those stained, two large brown teeth visible.
"You have two questions."
An answer and an order. I didn't waste time. Not with Rhys. Not when this wood might be full of enemies hunting for us.
"What poison was used on those arrows?"
"Bloodbane," it said.
I didn't know that poison. I'd never heard of it.
"Where do I find the cure?"
The Suriel clicked its bone fingers against each other, as if the answer lay inside the sound.
"In the forest."
I hissed, my brows flattening. "Please, please don't be cryptic. What is the cure?"
The Suriel cocked its head, the bone gleaming in the light.
"Your blood. Give him your blood, Cursebreaker. It is rich with the healing gift of the High Lord of the Dawn. It shall spare him from the Bloodbane's wrath."
"That's it?" I pushed. "How much blood?"
"A few mouthfuls will do."
A hollow, dry wind, not at all like the misty cold veils that usually drifted past, brushed my face.
"I helped you before. I have helped you now. And you will free me before I lose my patience, Cursebreaker."
Some primal, lingering human part of me trembled as I took in the snare around its legs, pinning it to the ground. Perhaps this time the Suriel had let itself be caught, and knew how to free itself, had learned in the moment I'd spared it from the Naga. A test of honor and a favor for the arrow I'd shot to save it last year. But I knocked an ash arrow into my bow, cringing at the sheen of poison coating it.
"Thank you for your help," I said.
I said, bracing myself for flight should it charge at me. The Suriel's stained teeth clacked against each other.
"If you wish to speed your mate's healing, in addition to your blood, a pink-flowered weed sprouts by the river. Make him chew it."
I fired my arrow at the snare before I finished hearing its words. The trap sprang free, and the word clicked through me. "Mate."
"What did you say?"
The Suriel rose to its full height, towering over me even from across the clearing. I had not realized that despite the bone, it was muscled, powerful.
"If you wish to."
The Suriel paused and grinned, showing nearly all of those brown, thick teeth.
"You did not know, then."
"Say it," I gritted out.
"The High Lord of the Night Court is your mate."
I wasn't entirely sure I was breathing.
"Interesting," the Suriel said.
"Mate. Mate. Mate. Rhysand was my mate.
Not lover, not husband, but more than that. A bond so deep, so permanent, that it was honored over all others. Rare. Cherished. Not Tamlin's mate. Rhysand's." I was jealous and pissed off. You're mine.
The words slipped out of me low and twisted.
Does he know?
The Surreal clenched the robes of its new cloak in its bone fingers.
Yes.
For a long while?
Yes. Since?
No. He can tell me. I want to hear it from his lips. The Surreal cocked its head.
You are feeling too much too fast. I cannot read it.
How can I possibly be his mate?
Mates were equals, matched, at least in some ways. He is the most powerful High Lord to ever walk this earth. You are new. You are made of all 7 High Lords, unlike anything. Are you 2 not similar in that? Are you not matched?
Mate. And he knew. He'd known. I glanced toward the river, as if I could see all the way to the cave, to where Rhysand slept. When I looked back at the Surreal, it was gone. I found the pink weed, and ripped it out of the ground as I stalked back to the cave. Mercifully, Rhys was half awake, the layers I'd thrown on him now scattered across the blanket, and he gave me a strange smile as I entered. I chucked the weed at him, showering his bare chest with soil. Chew on that. He blinked blearily at me.
Mate.
But he obeyed, frowning at the plant before he plucked off a few leaves and started chewing. He grimaced as he swallowed. I tore off my jacket, shoved up my sleeve, and strode to him.
He'd known, and kept it from me. Had the others known? Had they guessed?
He'd promised not to lie, not to keep things from me. And this? This most important thing in my immortal existence? I drew a dagger across my forearm, the cut long and deep, and dropped to my knees before him. I didn't feel the pain.
Drink this. Now.
Rhys blinked again, brows raising, but I didn't give him the chance to object before I gripped the back of his head, lifted my arm to his mouth, and shoved him against my skin. He paused as my blood touched his lips. Then his mouth opened wider, his tongue brushing my arm as he sucked in my blood. One mouthful. 2. 3. I yanked back my arm, the wound already healing, and shoved down my sleeve.
You don't get to ask questions, I said.
And he looked up at me, exhaustion and pain lining his face, my blood shining on his lips. Part of me hated the words, for acting like this while he was wounded, but I didn't care.
You only get to answer them, and nothing more.
Wariness flooded his eyes, but he nodded, biting off another mouthful of the weed and chewing. I stared down at him, the half-Illyrian warrior who was my soul bonded partner.
How long have you known that I'm your mate?
Rhys stilled. The entire world stilled. He swallowed.
Thera.
How long have you known that I'm your mate?
You ensnared the Surreal.
How he'd pieced it together, I didn't give a shit.
I said you don't get to ask questions.
I thought something like panic might have flashed over his features. He chewed again on the plant, as if it instantly helped, as if he knew that he wanted to be at his full strength to face this. Face me. Color was already blooming on his cheeks, perhaps from whatever healing was in my blood.
I suspected for a while,
Rhys said, swallowing once more.
I knew for certain when Amarantha was killing you. And when we stood on the balcony under the mountain, right after we were freed, I felt it snap into place between us. I think when you were made, it heightened the smell of the bond. I looked at you then, and the strength of it hit me like a blow.
He'd gone wide-eyed, had stumbled back as if shocked, terrified, and had vanished. That had been over half a year ago. My blood pounded in my ears. When were you going to tell me?
Thera.
When were you going to tell me?
I don't know. I wanted to yesterday. Or whenever you'd noticed that it wasn't just a bargain between us. I hoped you might realize when I took you to bed and—
Do the others know?
Amryn and Moore do. Asriel and Cassian suspect.
My face burned. They knew, they— Why didn't you tell me?
You were in love with him. You were going to marry him. And then you— You were enduring everything and it didn't feel right to tell you.
I deserved to know.
The other night you told me you wanted a distraction, you wanted fun, not a mating bond, and not to someone like me. A mess.
So the words I'd spat after the Court of Nightmares had haunted him. You promised. You promised no secrets, no games. You promised! Something in my chest was caving in on itself. Some part of me I'd thought long gone.
I know I did,
Rhys said, the glow returning to his face.
You think I didn't want to tell you? You think I liked hearing you wanted me only for amusement and release? You think it didn't drive me out of my mind so completely that those bastards shot me out of the sky because I was too busy wondering if I should just tell you or wait? Or maybe take whatever pieces that you offered me and be happy with it? Or that maybe I should let you go so you don't have a lifetime of assassins and High Lords hunting you down for being with me?
I don't want to hear this. I don't want to hear you explain how you assumed that you knew best, that I couldn't handle it.
I didn't do that.
I don't want to hear you tell me that you decided I was to be kept in the dark while your friends knew, while you all decided what was right for me.
Thera,
take me back to the Illyrian camp. Now. He was panting in great, rattling gulps.
Please.
But I stormed to him and grabbed his hand. Take me back now! And I saw the pain and sorrow in his eyes. Saw it and didn't care. Not as that thing in my chest was twisting and breaking. Not as my heart ached so viciously that I realized it had been somehow repaired in these past few months. Repaired by him. And now it hurt. Rhys saw all that and more on my face, and I saw nothing but agony in his as he rallied his strength and, grunting in pain, winnowed us into the Illyrian camp. Chapter 51. We slammed into freezing mud right outside the little stone house. I think he'd meant to winnow us into it, but his powers had given out. Across the yard I spied Cassian and Moore at the window of the house, eating breakfast. Their eyes went wide, and then they were rushing for the door.
Thera,
Rhys groaned, bare arms buckling as he tried to rise. I left him lying in the mud and stormed toward the house. The door flung open, and Cassian and Moore were sprinting for us, scanning every inch of our bodies. Cassian realized I was in one piece and hurtled for Rhys, who was struggling to rise, mud covering his bare skin. But Moore saw my face. I went up to her, cold and hollow. I want you to take me somewhere far away, I said, right now. I needed to get away. Needed to think, to have space and quiet and calm. Moore looked between us, biting her lip. Please, I said, and my voice broke on the word. Behind me, Rhys moaned my name again. Moore scanned my face once more and gripped my hand. We vanished into wind and night. Brightness assaulted me, and I gobbled up my surroundings. Mountains and snow all around, fresh and gleaming in the midday light, so clean against the dirt on me. We were high up on the peaks, and about 100 yards away, a log cabin stood tucked between two upper fangs of the mountains, shielding it from the wind. The house was dark. There was nothing around it for as far as I could see.
The house is warded, so no one can winnow in. No one can get beyond this point, actually, without our family's permission.
Moore stepped ahead, snow crunching under her boots. Without the wind, the day was mild enough to remind me that spring had dawned in the world, though I'd bet it would be freezing once the sun vanished. I trailed after her, something zinging against my skin.
"You're allowed in," Moore said.
"Because I'm his mate?" She kept wading through the knee-high snow.
"Did you guess, or did he tell you?"
"The Suriel told me, after I went to hunt it for information on how to heal him."
She swore.
Is he all right?"
"He'll live," I said. She didn't ask any other questions, and I wasn't feeling generous enough to supply further information. We reached the door to the cabin, which she unlocked with a wave of her hand. A main wood-paneled room consisting of a kitchen to the right, a living area with a leather sofa covered in furs to the left, a small hall in the back that led to two bedrooms and a shared bathing room, and nothing else.
"We got sent up here for reflection when we were younger," Moore said. "Rhys used to smuggle in books and booze for me."
I cringed at the sound of his name.
"It's perfect," I said tightly.
Moore waved a hand and a fire sprang to life in the hearth, heat flooding the room. Food landed on the counters of the kitchen, and something in the pipes groaned.
"No need for firewood," she said. "It'll burn until you leave."
She lifted a brow as if to ask when that would be. I looked away.
"Please don't tell him where I am."
"He'll try to find you."
"Tell him I don't want to be found. Not for a while." Moore bit her lip.
"It's not my business. Then don't say anything."
She did anyway.
"He wanted to tell you, and it killed him not to. But I've never seen him so happy as he is when he's with you. And I don't think that has anything to do with you being his mate."
"I don't care."
She fell silent, and I could feel the words she wanted to say building up. So I said, "Thank you for bringing me here." A polite dismissal. Moore bowed her head.
"I'll check back in 3 days. There are clothes in the bedrooms and all the hot water you want. The house is spelled to take care of you. Merely wish or speak for things and it'll be done."
I only wanted solitude and quiet, but a hot bath sounded like a nice way to start. She left the cottage before I could say anything else. Alone, no one around for miles, I stood in the silent cabin and stared at nothing. Part 3. The House of Mist. Chapter 52. There was a deep sunken tub in the floor of the mountain cabin, large enough to accommodate Illyrian wings. I filled it with water near scalding, not caring how the magic of this house operated, only that it worked. Hissing and wincing, I climbed in. 3 days without a bath, and I could have wept at the warmth and cleanliness of it. No matter that I'd once gone weeks without one. Not when drawing hot water for it in my family's cottage had been more trouble than it was worth. Not when we didn't even have a bathtub, and it required buckets and buckets to get clean. I washed with dark soap that smelled of smoke and pine, and when I was done, I sat there, watching the steam slither amongst the few candles. Mate. The word chased me from the bath sooner than I wanted, and hounded me as I pulled on the clothes I'd found in a drawer of the bedroom. Dark leggings,
a large cream-colored sweater that hung to mid-thigh and thick socks. My stomach grumbled, and I realized I hadn't eaten since the day before because he'd been injured and I'd gone out of my mind, absolutely insane, when he'd been taken from me, shot out of the sky like a bird. I'd acted on instinct, on a drive to protect him that had come from so deep in me. So deep in me. I found a container of soup on the wood counter that Moore must have brought in, and scrounged up a cast-iron pot to heat it. Fresh, crusty bread sat near the stove, and I ate half of it while waiting for the soup to warm. He'd suspected it before I'd even freed us from Amarantha. My wedding day. Had he interrupted to spare me from a horrible mistake, or for his own ends? Because I was his mate, and letting me bind myself to someone else was unacceptable? I ate my dinner in silence, with only the murmuring fire for company. And beneath the barrage of my thoughts, a throb of relief. My relationship with Tamlin had been doomed from the start. I had left, only to find my mate, to go to my mate. If I were looking to spare us both from embarrassment, from rumor, only that I'd found my true mate, would do the trick. I was not a lying piece of traitorous filth. Not even close. Even if Reese had known I was his mate. While I'd shared a bed with Tamlin, for months and months, he'd known I was sharing a bed with him and hadn't let it show. Or maybe he didn't care. Maybe he didn't want the bond, had hoped it'd vanish. I'd owed nothing to Reese then, had nothing to apologize for. But he'd known I'd react badly, that it'd hurt me more than help me. And what if I had known? What if I had known that Reese was my mate while I'd loved Tamlin? It didn't excuse his not telling me, didn't excuse the recent weeks when I'd hated myself so much for wanting him so badly, when he should have told me. But I understood. I washed the dishes, swept the crumbs off the small dining table between the kitchen and living area, and climbed into one of the beds. Just last night, I'd been curled beside him, counting his breaths to make sure he didn't stop making them. The night before, I'd been in his arms, his fingers between my legs, his tongue in my mouth. And now? Though the cabin was warm, the sheets were cold, the bed was large, empty. Through the small glass window, the snow-blasted land around me glowed blue in the moonlight. The wind was a hollow moan, brushing great, sparkling drifts of snow past the cabin. I wondered if Moore had told him where I was. Wondered if he'd indeed come looking for me. Mate. My mate. Sunlight on snow awoke me, and I squinted at the brightness, cursing myself for not closing the curtains. It took me a moment to remember where I was, why I was in this isolated cabin deep in the mountains of... I didn't know what mountains these were. Reese had once mentioned a favorite retreat that Moore and Amryn had burned to cinders in a fight. I wondered if this was it, if it had been rebuilt. Everything was comfortable, worn, but in relatively good shape. Moore and Amryn had known. I couldn't decide if I hated them for it. No doubt, Reese had ordered them to keep quiet, and they'd respected his wishes, but... I made the bed, fixed breakfast, washed the dishes, and then stood in the center of the main living space. I'd run away. Precisely how Reese expected me to run. How I'd told him anyone in their right mind would run from him. Like a coward, like a fool, I'd left him injured in the freezing mud. I'd walked away from him. A day after I'd told him he was the only thing I'd never walk away from. I demanded honesty. And at the first true test, I hadn't even let him give it to me. I hadn't granted him the consideration of hearing him out.
You see me.
Well, I'd refused to see him. Maybe I'd refused to see what was right in front of me. I'd walked away. And maybe... maybe I shouldn't have. Boredom hit me halfway through the day. Supreme, unrelenting boredom, thanks to being trapped inside while the snow slowly melted under the mild spring day, listening to it drip, drip, dripping off the roof. It made me nosy, and once I'd finished going through the drawers and closets of both bedrooms, clothes, old bits of ribbon, knives and weapons tucked between as if one of them had chucked them in and just forgotten, the kitchen cabinets, food, preserved goods, pots and pans, a stained cookbook, and the living area, blankets, some books, more weapons hidden everywhere, I ventured into the supply closet. For a High Lord's retreat, the cabin was not common, because everything had been made and appointed with care, but casual, as if this were the sole place where they might all come and pile into beds and on the couch and not be anyone but themselves, taking turns with who cooked that night and who hunted and who cleaned and... a family. It felt like a family, the one I'd never quite had. Had never dared really hope for. Had stopped expecting when I'd grown used to the space and formality of living in a manor, to being a symbol for a broken people, a high priestess's golden idol and puppet. I opened the storeroom door, a blast of cold greeting me, but candles sputtered to life, thanks to the magic that kept the place hospitable. Shelves free of dust, another magical perk, no doubt, gleamed with more food stores, books, sporting equipment, packs and ropes, and, big surprise, more weapons. I sorted through it all, these remnants of adventures past and future, and almost missed them as I walked past. Half a dozen cans of paint. Paper, and a few canvases. Brushes, old and flecked with paint from lazy hands. There were other art supplies, pastels and watercolors, what looked to be charcoal for sketching, but I stared at the paint, the brushes. Which of them had tried to paint while stuck here, or enjoying a holiday with them all? I told myself my hands were trembling with the cold as I reached for the paint and pried open the lid. Still fresh, probably from the magic preserving this place. I peered into the dark, gleaming interior of the can I'd opened. Blue. And then I started gathering supplies. I painted all day. And when the sun vanished, I painted all through the night. The moon had set by the time I washed my hands and face and neck and stumbled into bed, not even bothering to undress before unconsciousness swept me away. I was up, brush in hand, before the spring sun could resume its work thawing the mountains around me. I paused only long enough to eat. The sun was setting again, exhausted from the dent it had made in the layer of snow outside, when a knock sounded on the front door. Splattered in paint, the cream-colored sweater utterly wrecked, I froze. Another knock, light but insistent. Then, "Please don't be dead." I didn't know whether it was relief or disappointment that sank in my chest as I opened the door and found Moore huffing hot air into her cupped hands. She looked at the paint on my skin, in my hair, at the brush in my hand, and then at what I had done. Moore stepped in from the brisk spring night and let out a low whistle as she shut the door. "Well... you've certainly been busy." "Indeed. I painted nearly every surface in the main room." And not with just broad swaths of color, but with decorations, little images. Some were basic. Clusters of icicles drooping down the sides of the threshold. They melted into the first